The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Every Friday we get an assortment, liquors all sorts really, of Final Furlong panellists to go through the week. It's a great pleasure to welcome back my colleague here, News Talk Breakfast presenter on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 8 a.m, Susan Keogh. Of course, busy, busy, busy with the election last weekend. Senator David Norris, who is standing yet again because the Senate election comes straight after the general election. We'll come to that. And comedian Tom O'Mahony, who is on his caveman tour, and you can check it out on his Tom O'Mahony comedy at gmail.com website. Just tell us, you're cutting your wife's hair?
I'm not cutting my wife's hair. My wife is
Samson and Delilah or something. What is this?
It's a romantic thing. I just getting into hair. No, my wife is having just over a foot chopped off her hair for the Little Princess Trust. It goes towards wigs for little folks that may have lost their hair through treatment. She's raising funds then as well for that, and the funds will go towards Friends of St. Luke's Cancer Charity
so,
here in
so
Dublin.
How can people support this?
If they go to idonate.ie, so it's idonate,
right.
.ie/Natasha O'Mahony. Or if they go to my Twitter, it's fairly recent.
And tell me this, does she have a foot to spare? Like,
she does have a foot.
Me and
she
David Norris wouldn't have a foot of hair.
She has enough hair for all of us.
Ivan Yates, I came in, I'm not. No, it was Pat Kenny I did it with, I think, or one of the others.
Your beard.
I shaved my hair off and my beard, and we raised 25,000 for St. Vincent's cancer.
Give me a break.
Big money. Big money.
Very insulting. My hair is insulted. Yeah. My two hairs are insulted.
Well, with the day that's in it.
Love is in the air. Everywhere I look around. Love is in the air. Every sight and every sound.
Well, as you've been hearing non-stop since 4 o'clock, today, of course, is Valentine's Day. And we've been asking for your favourite music. But a survey from the app Plenty of Fish, I call that shooting fish in a barrel app, there's concern that men are less chivalrous. They're not holding the door open. And women prefer a man not to be holding his phone constantly, but to be more, shall we say, chivalrous. So, millennial singletons, they're looking for strong eye contact and smart appearance, according to this same survey. First of all, any particular Valentine memories, Susan Keogh?
No, I'm not big into Valentine's Day at all. I wouldn't be a big romantic. I like a little bit of romance, I think, every day of the year, as opposed to a big blowout on Valentine's Day and then nothing for the rest
of
the year.
But what about your partner? I mean, have you been wooed?
No, I got a beautiful bunch of flowers last night and I got a card this morning. I don't buy cards or anything on Valentine's Day. My 8-year-old daughter thought that was pretty mean this morning. I got a bit of a hard time for not buying daddy a card. But I'm lucky enough that I get flowers quite regularly, maybe, during the year. So I wouldn't anticipate Valentine's Day in a big way.
So you'd be kind of disappointed if you didn't get a bunch.
Yeah, I would be a little bit.
Right.
But yeah.
You're high maintenance. Okay. Tom, tell me what's the story.
I'm glad you asked. Look at that. I got you a Valentine's Day
card. You got me a Valentine's
Day. I got you one today. It's just two blokes comfortable with each other.
Ivan, roses are red, violets are blue. Yes, you're from Wexford and that's not your fault.
I just said I had to do something for
you. This is so romantic. This is the only Valentine's Valentine card I'm going to receive.
Postmodern poetry.
There you go.
It doesn't rhyme.
It doesn't have to. No.
I'm touched. I have to say.
I did not touch you. We have two witnesses here.
I'm overcome. That is so kind of you. On Valentine's Day with love. So did you send your better half one of these?
No, I didn't, because she doesn't like cards. She doesn't like cards. She doesn't. She got flowers. I got her flowers. All right. But just like Susan was saying, we're kind of sound to each other the rest of the year too. You know, that kind of way.
You didn't propose or anything like that on Valentine's Day? A lot of people do that go to huge
hackiness
trouble.
Is not a big thing in our house. If I propose on Valentine's Day, she'd say, wait a day, will you? Come on.
I actually think a lot of people avoid days like Valentine's Day, Christmas Eve. I think people like to pick their own day. It's a bit predictable maybe to do it on Valentine's Day.
Now, David, the repository of all romance. Tell me, what's your take on Valentine's Day?
Well, the first thing is that the bones of St. Valentine's are in the Roman Catholic Church here in Dublin. I think it's in Whitefriars.
Yeah.
So there was a St. Valentine.
He's only around the corner. Valentine.
I think he was a Roman centurion or something.
He was a man.
My youngest sister
was born on Valentine's Day and her name is Valentine. So I assumed it was a girl's name.
No, it's a big name in Cork. Yeah. There's still a lot of blokes called Valentine, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now it's like the boy named Sue, you're gonna grow up pretty tough if you're called Valentine, aren't you?
Well, you'd be Val. You'd always be Val.
I suppose you'd be Val, yeah.
So this saint, he was a real man, was he?
He was a real man. And was there
no celibacy in those days?
I don't know, but in the 1830s, I think, the then incumbent Pope gave St. Valentine's bones to Dublin. It's rather interesting. Yeah.
It is. And would you now, over the years, have done anything special on Valentine's? And within the gay community, is it a big thing or not?
I suppose it's the same it's as anywhere same, else.
Exactly, yeah.
But I never sent a Valentine. I used to get some. I haven't the last little while.
Yes.
But I also, I had a stalker.
Oh, no.
I had to get the police.
Stop the lights.
Seriously?
We need to hear more about this.
17 pages of ruled notepaper in green biro, underlined in red, about how passionately she loved me and all this kind of stuff. Poor thing. You know, she wasn't really responsible.
But she
came banging on the door, determined to get in.
All I brought you was a card.
I feel underwhelmed.
The thing, in my childhood, which would be now we're talking
Stone
the Age. 60s and 70s, yeah. Right? The Valentine's card was anonymous. You sent it to someone to kind of communicate to them. Now it's kind of for people who are loved up in a relationship.
And keep them guessing. It was sometimes a little mischievous.
And someone got three in school or whatever. Yeah, yes. When did this change or does that still happen?
I have no idea.
Last year, actually, I hope my daughter's not listening to this, but I don't think she will be. Last year, my husband sent my daughter an anonymous Valentine's Day card and she got it in the post box and she brought it up to her room. Bit of crack. Didn't think that she'd think too much into it. She was only 7. Well, she was so intrigued as to who possibly could have sent this, and it sat on the bedside locker, and every night she'd say, who sent that Valentine's card? Who sent it? And she was looking at it really, really intently. Yeah. And this went on for ages. And about 3 months after it, we were down in the kitchen one day and my husband was writing in our homework journal, writing something. And she took one look at it and she went, hang on a second.
I know that.
And up the stairs she went, got the card, brought it down.
And what was her reaction?
Daddy, did you send me this card? He denied it.
So
only 2 days ago she said, do you remember I got that card last year? I wonder who that was from. I wonder will I get one again this year? So, you know, she still didn't know it was Daddy, but she was so intrigued as to who possibly could send it to her.
And it's understandable. Mm. It's understandable. My God. A lot of problems in that household. We'll move quickly.
That's just
quickly on. What about a bit of nostalgia? That was, of course, a Journey with Don't Stop Believing from 1981. And the reason we played that is that MasterCard, ahead of the Brit Awards next week, did a survey of 2,000 people to find amongst those over 70, what was the most popular decade of music in terms of the ones that endured forever. And they're still sampling new music, these old crinklies and so on, but the 80s were regarded as the best decade, and the best particular song were Queen's Greatest Hits, Beatles' Abbey Road, and Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Tom, are you a music aficionado?
No. I like music probably for different reasons, in that I don't get overly into the artists and stuff like that, but I like miserable music. You know,
ballads?
Do you know something now, like Hank Williams, some country where there's nearly blood running out of the radio. You know that pure misery. Nothing makes me happier than hearing about some fella in his pickup truck and the dog dying in the back of it and the wife leaving him and him, you know.
The crop in the field.
I love that stuff. Yeah, really puts me in good form. Proper misery.
Yes,
like,
you're looking at your sad life and thinking, hey, it's not too bad here.
I find myself writing Valentine's cards to middle-aged men from Wexford. You know what I mean? This is where my life is at. Ivan.
You need help, but there's no doubt about this. So, are you in music? Because I'm thinking of you. I'm thinking of Chopin, Mozart, and all of that.
Yes, but I am over 75, and so I qualify as a crinkly.
Yes.
And I do listen to pop music. I don't always listen to the names. I never heard of those people that you played, whoever they were.
Right.
And I don't believe it. I think MasterCard have got it all wrong, because for people over 75, the decade of music was the 1960s. And in 1965, I went to the Adelphi Theatre in Abbey Street, and I saw the Rolling Stones with Mick Jagger singing things like, "Because I used to love her." And then he'd jump up and he'd click his heels. I mean, that was real entertainment. It was absolutely fantastic. So to me, the Rolling Stones...
But surely the Beatles.
I'm not arguing with you about this,
because I do take the Rolling Stones.
I didn't like the Beatles as much at the time. I've come to appreciate them much more... in recent years. But also there was Hey Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yes.
And that was such a wonderful tune. It was great.
Bob Dylan.
Yeah,
and then when...
But it was actually the Byrds that was the version that I liked.
Okay. Now, when sort of rock and heavier rock and Bill Haley and Rock Around the Clock...
Bill Haley was rather boring.
Were you a good dancer in your day?
Oh, I am an appalling...
I bet he's still a good dancer.
I bet you any money.
No. Actually, some of the best dancers in the country are gay men. I mean, they're incredible dancers.
Absolutely. I used to watch them in the disco that I ran.
Yes.
But no, I'm... Two left feet, and it's the one thing that makes me absolutely
You ran a disco.
I ran.
Did
the
you
first...
play the records?
No, I didn't. But
you organized.
He just made a fortune on the door.
That's
how
much I know about
you
music.
You were the bouncer, were you?
My fame was because I stopped Elton John going in, and I said, "I don't think you're a member. Can I see your membership card?" And I did the same to Freddie Mercury.
when they were famous.
Oh, I hadn't the slightest idea who they were. No, I didn't. Everybody else did.
And did you?
Music wasn't for you at the time.
Genuflect and backtrack when you were told.
I didn't get the chance because Elton John just walked straight past me, accompanied by a trio of acolytes, bearing one with a bowl of ice, crushed ice, one with a bottle of champagne, and the other one with a flask of freshly squeezed orange.
I thought you were going to say gold frankincense and myrrh.
That was telling you.
Actually, talking about frankincense, you know, they've stopped the incense in Christchurch Cathedral.
Why? Right. People getting high?
No, the Archbishop told them, apparently. So I saw them on Christmas Day, and I said, "Listen to all those carols, I hope. Reeking with incense, every single one of them."
Yeah.
Right, okay. Hmm. The question was about music, though.
They have stopped the Peace Be With You in mass as well.
Yes,
have you noticed
indeed,
that?
Yeah.
They've stopped the Peace
That's
Be With You.
That's the coronavirus. You can't be shaking hands. Yes. You can't be shaking hands with people.
Funny what David said there. I think for me, music, it's all about the memory. So you probably love 60s music because when you think back, that's probably a really good time in your life. And for me, it would be 90s music because that was when I started to go out. So I was in school in the 90s and then I started college in the early noughties. So,
and were you in love? I mean, that's the thing for me about
a million
the 60s,
times
I was
over. Like,
in love.
You know, so you had so I songs.
But you do
bring...
associate songs with couples.
Absolutely, and nostalgia. So you'll hear a song now in the 90s and the early 90s. It was all Celine Dion and Take That and Westlife and
because you've had a lot of exes, have you?
But you'd hear a song and you would be transported back to a dance floor in a nightclub dancing with somebody in the late 90s, early noughties. And so it's all about music that has memories. Like, I think it's such a trigger for, you know, you can be really brought back to that
so
time.
So half
a
Kildare, and you have this deep connection.
Start with Kildare. I went to college in Dublin. So.
All right. Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, no weird love songs?
No.
No.
No, I can't bring myself.
But there's no, like, the particular song, you know, is number one at a time that you're, you know, going through this intense flush of love.
I can barely remember what I had for breakfast, Ivan. Well, you're asking me to remember back to the 90s. Come on.
Right. All right.
I can remember what I had for breakfast. I had a cup of coffee. I hope you've noticed. I've lost four stone.
You're looking positively shredded, David.
Notice. Well, you see, they always send
you should
me
come
in
shortless.
Hospital. And the last time, 18 months ago, was they found I had diabetes. You're supposed to be level 6.
Did you have?
I was level 27.
Did you have difficulty?
You invented a new level of diabetes.
Yeah.
But did you have difficulty losing the weight?
No, because they put me on this injection. And I take it once a week into the stomach, hardly hurts at all, doesn't hurt in fact at all. And one of the side effects is you lose your appetite.
Mm.
It's
right.
Wonderful.
And can you reverse your diabetes if you lose the weight?
Well, I think so, yeah. But the only thing is, yesterday I ate two packets of sweets.
Right.
What kind
right.
of sweets?
Well, you need something to invigorate your Pastilles. Senate campaign.
Oh, yeah.
A few wine gums to get you fired up.
Because, wine gums, yeah.
And good luck with your Senate campaign.
Well, thank you very
all
much.
All right. My guests today, Susan Keogh, News Talk Breakfast weekend presenter, Senator David Norris, who's setting out, just handed in his nomination papers today, again on the Senate trail. You just can't get enough of a good thing. Of course, this is on the posh panel, is it? Trinity?
It's on the only Democratic panel in the whole Senate.
How's that?
Well, because the university seats, we have, well, the other seats, 11 nominated directly by the Taoiseach, 43 by the county councils, about 1,000 of them. I have 65,000 voters. But, that's real democracy.
No, sorry, I'm sorry.
And
I'm sorry.
UCD,
I've gone completely
NUI,
socialist.
NUI
I am Shinner
has 110,000.
No, this elitism that only people who have been to the poshest school and got the most the most out of society are entitled to vote.
Well,
and numbskulls like myself and ordinary working people, the downtrodden people.
What about
Ireland,
the working class? What about the working class?
They don't vote
excuse
on the Trinity
excuse me,
panel.
You are the elitist attacking the only democratic element. What is needed is not to extinguish democracy, but to bring it alive in the other constituencies. And if I'm re-elected, that's what I'll be doing.
All right. And we also have comedian Tom O'Mahony here, who is not going for the Senate, but he is cutting his wife's hair off. And you can go to idonate.ie to find out what that's all about. OK, let's turn to our next topic, which is a text sent into Lunchtime Live. Our good friend, Dr. Ciara Kelly. Ciara, honestly, my head is wrecked with chat about the elections now. I'm in a WhatsApp group and sick to death of arguments on it, how we voted. Some of them are so sickening and patronising to those of us who voted Sinn Féin. Worse still, we're all away together this weekend for a hen. How am I going to survive? So, this to me is absolutely the story of the campaign, which was the youthquake, those under 34 in particular, one in three of them and more, voting Sinn Féin, a lot of them first-time voters and so on. And therefore, social media was a huge part of this and a huge part of transfers. In terms of this story, the level, would you ever fall out with someone, a family friend? Or
not in the least.
Tom, over politics?
No, because the people I hang out with are actually good crack. Yeah, we don't.
They're not saddos.
That is one of the, like, unless you're actually involved in politics, I cannot wrap my head around how your hobby would be politics. Unless you're involved in it. I know somebody, a good friend of ours, who's kind of on the periphery now at this stage.
Yeah.
Actually went to America during the last elections just because they love American politics that much.
Yeah.
It's like, would you not support an old team or something like? Or take up stamp collecting? Unless you're involved in it, this is what you're going to do with your time, is talk about politics.
Well, in fairness now, there's lots of people who I would say have very minimal interest in governance and the running of the country and political parties. But, you know, like we had over 100,000 hits on the podcast for the people actually see it as a sport, like, you know, picking a winner at Cheltenham or whatever. And that there is a blood sport element because it's like the reality shows. There will be someone booted off and there will be someone winning.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of a row. Why is everybody running away from a row? Go to the hen weekend or the spa weekend.
You're from Tipperary.
I know, we love scrapping. We love scrapping.
And that's ground hurling every time, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, yeah. And low you break hurlies. You break hurlies.
That's it, yeah.
So, David, I am interested in this, first because you're immersed in politics.
I love it.
You are independent and so on. And you've seen so many trends come and go. The volatility of this really was completely different to anything I've seen before.
This election?
Yes,
it was. And I think the two, formerly the largest parties, are extremely stupid not to incorporate Sinn Féin. You know, if they precipitate another election, the people will punish them. And all that will happen is that Sinn Féin will get a very much increased representation in the Oireachtas. But getting back to this woman on her hen party.
Yes.
I mean, there is a secrecy of the ballot. If she didn't want to have to defend her views, why did she let anybody know what way she voted?
That's a great point. Yes.
Yeah, I think this is daft.
Say nothing and keep saying it.
It's funny. Yeah. I think it used to be considered kind of a rude question to ask somebody, how are you voting? But particularly in general election 2020, in that campaign, I have heard more people ask openly somebody, how are you voting? And I think it was a particularly divisive campaign, and I think people were hugely engaged. And I get, you know, I have an awful lot of friends who aren't particularly political, in general wouldn't follow politics day to day, but they got involved in this campaign and they certainly had something to say and followed all of the polls and followed all of the coverage. I think it may have stemmed from a kind of more engaged public to do with Repeal the Eighth and the marriage referendum. Yeah. I think people became quite engaged over
and
those
they registered.
Two. And they registered and they followed the coverage, and then and people followed Brexit to some degree. And then when it got to our own general election, that kind of followed through yeah. to people. I would think for this particular text, you know, absolutely don't talk about it on a hen away. You know, you should never try and convince somebody to come over to your way of thinking or vice versa. You know, people will differ on politics. That's
and
the nature of the
drunk.
Game.
If it's a hen, they'll get drunk and skin and fur will fly.
Whatever became of getting a good owl stripper for the hen? You know what I mean?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
What? You know, right. Politically based or not.
From which party?
Well, you see that the three things at a dinner party you should not talk about are sex, religion and politics.
Yes.
So you're down to sex and religion at the hen now.
Good crack.
But can I say that this woman talks about the strain on ordinary people of politics. What about the strain on politicians?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's extremely difficult to sustain a long-term relationship if you're in politics, because you're committed, you don't know your hours, you could be out at any time, you could be at meetings, all this kind of stuff.
Well, in addition to that, you'll be drawn into arguments with people. At least, you know, most of us can hide our politics. So if you do go to a dinner party, you don't necessarily have to talk to them. If you're running for Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or Sinn Féin, then you will be drawn into more conversations. I try to avoid talking politics with people, but I found during this campaign, I found that I wanted to talk to people about politics, because I think in the media we have a certain role to play in getting messages out there, and I kind of wanted to see where those messages landing. And there was a lot of misunderstanding about certain things, and you will still even now hear people say, you know, Sinn Féin won the election, they won all the votes. Like, you know, they didn't. They won 24% of the votes. Yeah, like the vast majority of people still voted for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, but that will be repeated to me, you know, by people, because people kind of pick up things that they want to pick up.
Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil together.
Yeah.
But the majority vote went to Sinn Féin. That is a huge revolution.
No. Let's be clear about this, insofar as that, yes, you're absolutely right on the mood of the moment. But you know what? Last week, they could have been exercised about the FAI and John Delaney. Next week, they could be exercised about Harry and Meghan.
No, Sinn Féin has had an incremental increase over a period. I think it is
in the presidential election they got 6%.
In the local
elections they lost 59 councillors, they got 9%.
Yes, but they've been coming up steadily since then.
Well, the by-election was the first sign of that. But I mean, I mean, the last imprint on the cushion is not the only imprint on the cushion. There will be another imprint coming along. But I'm fascinated by the point you were making about that people would normally just be bored with politics.
Absolutely.
That's full fogies, and it's nothing to do with my life or my thing. Is it because of their a lot of the last two elections were similar? That it's what happened in the crash, that you negative equity, long commuting, what happened in housing is a kind of continuum. Like you take the lack of recovery for the Labour Party and so on. So that I actually see a thread through this of anger. And it's moved in a particular case.
Yeah,
this time.
I actually think, like you put it quite well in your podcast with Gavin, even though you didn't get your calling it too well. But what you put really well was that, you know, before it was all about anger, it was all about austerity. And this time around, it was about kind of aspirational anger. So the country had done better and people now wanted to own a home. They wanted to feel the benefits of that in their bank account. But there is a general consensus that people will say to you very kind of glibly, Fianna Fáil wrecked the country, Fine Gael failed to fix it. Now I'm going to hand it over to Sinn Féin. Like that on a very basic level.
Gael, sorry, I mean, I'm not a Fine Gael person, but Fine Gael did fix it.
But there is a perception with people, David, that they didn't.
Bad communication by the parties.
Well, that's exactly
why
they
might have fixed employment, but they didn't necessarily fix health and housing.
And housing became the big issue.
That's not the economy. They certainly fixed the economy. There's no doubt about that. But coming back to what you said, I think you're 100% right, Ivan, that people enjoy the blood sport element.
And it's very cool.
Don't underestimate, Ivan, because it was so close. That was the reason. You see, before we've always known the outcome. You could guess the outcome. You knew it was probably going to be one of the two. This time, people began to realise, actually, this is a real competition. Nobody really knows what's going to happen here. Obviously, that made it exciting for everyone, even from covering the election from my point
of
view.
And the three-way, triangular
such a better election to cover than any of the previous ones that I've ever covered, because you couldn't call it.
Absolutely. The other thing that I just want to echo that you said, David, having stood in 8 general elections myself and almost 20 elections between local elections and so on, I actually feel a deep sense of empathy for people who've lost their seats.
Absolutely.
And so on. And I would say to them, number
one... But people
one,
love watching that.
Oh, stop. And I mean, there's lots of tears at counts. Mm. And a lot of people are completely blindsided, didn't see this coming. And they're, not only is their income upended, their whole status in the community, their dignity is upended. Like, it's very tough.
I haven't been close to Shane Ross for quite a number of years now. I used to be very friendly with him, but not anymore. But I have to say, despite my disagreements with him, my heart went out to him. He looked so shattered. You know?
And just to say, Ivan, I know you're not on Twitter, but if you are, and people who have been on social media over the past weekend, there was absolutely no sympathy. People are really cruel about people losing their jobs. There was a real distasteful narrative going on about, you know, delighted to see him get that, delighted to see people get the boost. Really kicking
the boot. That's Twitter.
One of the successful candidates.
Somebody could drop dead and they don't care.
Yeah. Said Shane was a scumbag.
Yeah, no. It was Michael Collins, and he apologised for it. And the other thing is, you started by saying people couldn't hold down relationships so well in politics.
That's right, yes.
But I would say, to people who've lost their seat, you will be amazed how good life is after politics if you decide to go. But there is nothing worse. There's nothing worse than someone, and I can think a lot of them, both independents and so on, like you take Charlie O'Connor now in Talla, Manix Flynn, the salt of the earth type people.
Yes.
And they keep running for election after election after election, and actually they're probably past their best electoral performance, and I actually think there's an addictive element for candidates that they just have to keep at it and keep at it.
If they put
the same energy into anything else, they'd
but
have
is
a
it hard
life.
For them to know what else to do? You know, if you're in politics, if you've been a local councillor, if you've been involved in local activism, whatever path you took to running for the Dáil, if you don't get elected, you know, what do you do then? And also the possibility of going again is 4 or 5 years away. Whereas, you know, if I go for a job interview and I don't get the job, I can think to myself, well, maybe I'll be going
for... Well, some of them would be councillors, of course, and do have a foot in the Dáil. But I remember when I announced at 41 that I was quitting politics, there were people just could not understand it. They just, you know, there were so...
Why did you have enough at 41?
Because I'd done 21
You'd
years
done 21
of it.
Years,
I mean, like,
yeah.
and like, I wasn't dying wondering. You know, everything I do in politics, I had done.
Well, it is serious, but at the same time, it is a wonderful game. And it's the best gossip you could possibly have.
Yeah, it's racy. It's racy at times.
You need a thick skin, that is for sure.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But social media did not exist in my day. All right, the final topic I want to put to my panellists of the final furlong, Susan Keogh, David Norris and Tom O'Mahony, is a survey this week from the website Lad Bible, whatever that is. But it found, anyway, something positive. Thomas Shelby played brilliantly by Cillian Murphy and those blue eyes in Peaky Blinders was the greatest TV character of all time. Obviously, right up there, Breaking Bad's Walter White, The Sopranos, Tony Soprano, and different characters from Game of Thrones, and not forgetting Miley from Glen Row. So tell us this, Tom O'Mandy. What's your idea? Because this is a bit like music, you know, at a particular time in your life, you're watching Dallas, so you're watching something. But like in Tipperary, very sheltered existence, you probably had no running water and outside toilets and all that kind of thing. Was there any TV character registered with you?
I can't believe that MacGyver didn't make it onto this list. I mean, MacGyver. A man could make an aeroplane out of a jar of Shivers jam and an elastic band with a...
Tell me about MacGyver again.
He was unbelievable. Remember, he had an unbelievable haircut for starters. He had the blonde mullet. He'd start, he was always frightened of guns, but he was always solving issues with his Swiss Army knife, and he just put together whatever was needed. He was an absolute genius. He'd always get himself out of situations with whatever was lying around him.
Yeah,
I loved MacGyver.
MacGyver was amazing.
Sorry, what was he now? Like, was he wasn't a detective?
Richard Dean Anderson. He just, well, he was a bit like...
Look, I always believed the characters, whether it's Coronation Street, so don't confuse me with saying who it really was.
Right.
But no, but he was a good guy, obviously.
He was a good guy. Oh, yeah, good he was a good guy.
But I have to say, none of these mean anything whatever to me.
Oh, MacGyver,
I mean,
surely.
No, I've never seen Game of Thrones. I once caught a glimpse of Peaky Blinders, and I thought, God, I'm not watching that with those bloody awful caps, which I wear myself.
The cap put him off.
Yeah, the cap put me off. But the people I wouldn't know...
Actually, like, you wear three-piece suits.
Frost.
Yes. But then a Healy Ray cap on top of it.
David Jason as Detective Inspector Frost, or Leo McKern, the wonderful Leo McKern, playing Rumpole of the Bailey, and
yes.
She Who Must Be Obeyed. I mean, that's real television.
You would have made a great Rumpole of the
you
Bailey.
You would, yeah. You have a Rumpole-ish go about you.
I was sitting up there looking down over your half-moon glasses.
Not a judge, no. But I would love to have been a barrister.
Well, did you ever consider it?
No.
Okay,
no, but I'm interested in the law.
Okay, now I want to
talk about 30
this.
Actions okay, altogether.
Favorite cop, you know, so you have everything from was it Starsky and Hutch, Kojak, Columbo,
Law and Order,
Cagney and
Poirot.
Lacey,
Cagney and Poirot. Lacey,
Cagney
yes.
and Lacey,
yes.
Yes.
Cagney and Lacey, two women.
And
I'll never give up on this feminist
I never
crack.
Do, and I won't. It'll be
Cagney
the hill.
Lacey were great.
It'll be the hill I die on. And to mention, though, I loved Peaky Blinders, loved Thomas Shelby, Cillian Murphy, but Killian's
Polly,
aunt, Polly Gray,
yes.
There's some
no,
woman to watch.
Very good, yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen,
terrifying.
Obviously, Peaky Blinders, very violent and everything, but she's the matriarch.
Oh, yeah.
She pulls all the
and
strings.
And has her own issues.
And she's her own issues, but she's a fantastic character.
Totally
and there's actually
agree.
A load of really strong female characters.
But
in
I
Peaky
like
Blinders.
Arthur as well.
Arthur, yeah. Like
no,
Arthur.
I really am a big fan. But no, any particular... Columbo, the way he'd scratch the head and he'd have the dirty...
And just... And one more thing.
That's exactly...
He always turned round in the door as he was leaving and said, and one more, just one more thing.
One more thing.
Okay. Irish drama. Irish drama. For me, I go back to Batty and Minnie Brennan, Tom and Mary Reardon, right through the Reardons, and then we had Glen Rowe, Dick and Mary. The way
and we had the Kennedys of Castle Ross.
That was on radio, was it?
It was on radio, but it was wonderful.
Any particular Irish drama, Ed, that you grew up to?
I'm way too young for any of this.
Right. Ballycus Angel, all right.
The Foley family.
Ballycus Angel was a bit schnazzy.
Right.
You remember that?
Neil Tobin was the priest. Or
Colin
was
Farrell was in
Colin Farrell made an
Ballycus
appearance
do you
during his line dancing
the
days.
The Foley family on the radio... And it's this old couple, they were always bickering. Ah, Alice, Tom. And it started with this wonderful introductory piano piece.
That was the signature tune.
That was the signature tune.
I want to see more of this stuff.
And then you get Tom.
And then, did you remember things like Upstairs, Downstairs and Downton Abbey?
Yes, I do remember.
Well, I love Downton Abbey.
Oh,
yeah.
Downton
Abbey. I'm a fan of Downton Abbey.
You just don't get class like it anymore.
But an appallingly ugly house. The house and the furniture
would have
played a great Carson.
Oh, no.
No.
I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole.
No.
No.
And what you mentioned, what about comedy? Your favourite sort of comedic characters?
Only Fools
some others
and
do have them.
David Jason, once again.
Do you know what I loved when I was younger? And it's a really old programme. The Golden Girls.
Oh, yeah.
The
Golden
Girls
were amazing.
Oh,
they were terrific.
They were only surpassed by Charlie's Angels.
Oh, no, the Golden Girls.
Golden
I'd
Girls
sit down and
class.
Watch a good few episodes Hello,
hello.
Of that now.
Hello, hello. Do you remember Hello, hello?
Yeah, it's okay.
Is that Dad's Army?
It was kind of in around the same
in
time.
France.
Yeah, yeah, same
right.
time. Set in France.
Yes.
But it was ingeniously written in that they'd all be speaking English. But if you spoke
Except
with a slightly German accent and he spoke with a slightly French, they couldn't understand
Except
each other.
The policeman who always got everything wrong.
Everything. Everything got it wrong.
And, yeah. But did you have any kind of inspiration in your own comedic career, such as it is?
Yeah.
from TV? Or like, was there any particular genre of humour that you say, that makes me laugh?
The Young Ones, for me, because it was so off the wall crazy. And it
right.
was kind of rebellious, you know what I mean? Like, Adrian Edmondson running through a wall, but you know.
But I thought you'd be more dumb believables, no?
I suppose the dumb believables was there, but for me, the British comedy was. It was smartly written, like, and Bottom as well, and getting to work with Rick Mayall then on top of that was essentially like a comedian getting to, you know, a junior boxer getting to work with a Muhammad Ali. So
all right. Okay. Well, look, good luck with your fundraiser.
Thank you very much.
Donate.ie. Good luck with your Senate campaign. And this weekend now on News Talk Breakfast at Saturday and Sunday at 8 a.m.
8 to 9, yeah. We're going to be keeping, obviously, an eye on any government formation movement, although it will probably be slow. But we're also going to be talking to three first-time TDs who will be joining Leinster House on Thursday for the very first time. I'll be asking them, what are they bringing for their lunch? Who are they going to ask where the toilet is and all those kind of important questions?
The staff in Leinster House are absolutely superb. Yeah. They are so, wouldn't you agree, Ivan? They're so friendly. When you're elected first, they show you around where to go. They help you in every possible way. They're really professional.
The other thing is, these people now, wait till I tell you, they'll want to change the world. Just give them one piece of advice. More people talk themselves out of the door than talk themselves into it. But now they will be so excited and so full of, I'm going to change the world. Come back to me 20 years later.
But isn't it wonderful that we have young people like that?
Oh, totally.
When you think the pay is not that great.
It's not bad now.
Well, it's not great in the Senate, I can tell you that. But also the constant vilification of politicians.
Oh, you need to have a rhinoceros-like.
Yeah,
all right. My sincere thanks. I look forward to that on News Talk Breakfast tomorrow morning. Weekend presenter Susan Keogh, Senator David Norris, and comedian Tom O'Mahony. Thank you all for being my guests on The Final Furlong.